It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. It's good to see you back here. I'm lawyered up. I got both of you in here today. I'm honored.
Kind of tag-teamed it there for a couple of weeks with everything going on, but we're trying to get back to a normal routine.
That's good. Yep. That's a nice first start, and I like seeing both of you in the studio here. So welcome, Cecil.
Absolutely,
welcome, Wes.
Mike. We're glad to be back. It's wonderful to have both Wes and myself together today. We have been kind of betwixt and between with the virus here, not knowing quite where that was all heading. We are so very fortunate that it seems that in eastern North Carolina, at least, we haven't had quite the devastation that maybe once was thought might occur.
Yep.
And so things are slowly, very slowly, getting back to normal. In the meantime, yesterday, seeing clients and had the question, well, Cecil, what's going on? Are you and Wes busy? And, of course, the answer is busy in a different way.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about that today. The virus has, of course, changed our economy. And in the course of changing our economy, of course, it has created some legal issues that maybe would not have been out there in times past. Now, the one that we're going to talk about this morning, we may talk about more than one, but in the state of North Carolina, when folks decide to buy a piece of land, real property, they enter into what's known as an offer to purchase and contract. We're doing one of those this morning for a good client of ours. This is a formal contract, Mike, between a buyer and a seller to purchase a piece of property. And in the state of North Carolina, an agreement touching and concerning real estate must be in writing. So we lawyers are oftentimes contacted by clients to secure a written document relative to a buy or sell of a parcel of real estate. We have many of these in our office, and usually they kind of go along the path, and the realtors, as we know, handle a lot of the leg lifting on all of this. But what has been happening a bit with the virus, and Wes mentioned that he had a case, and I know that I now have one that I was planning to discuss with the lawyers at the office today concerning, you know, the buyer is getting cold feet, particularly a developer buyer or a buyer that was buying the property under the objectives of developing or renovating, something of that nature. Now, your purchases for homes and things of that nature probably are moving along pretty well, and the buyers aren't getting cold feet because they want to have their new home. But the one that I have concerns a gentleman who was going to buy a piece of property for speculation, for development, for renovation purposes. And, of course, he all of a sudden has decided here very recently that he just simply wasn't going to close. And there's no real stated legitimate reason for that. And so, unfortunately, this gentleman is in breach of contract. And when you are in breach of contract in the state of North Carolina under an offer to purchase and contract, we have a very interesting body of law. Wes is going to kind of take over now, but these cases become a litigation case. Mm-hmm. The seller absolutely can file a lawsuit against the buyer. On the other hand, if the seller, for some reason, were to back out of a contract, the buyer can file a lawsuit against the seller.
Works
both ways. Now, Wes is going to tell us what makes it interesting in the state of North Carolina in terms of the remedy that you are able to get with regard to these particular conflicts. What's the remedy, Wes?
Well, it depends on the language in the contract, of course. I mean, if we have, you know, what I refer to as kind of the older offer to purchase and contract. And, you know, we kind of throw this term along, offer to purchase and contract, offer to purchase and contract, offer to purchase and contract. What is that, Mr. Lawyer? What do you, I want you to say contract. Mm-hmm. Well, the reason we say offer to purchase and contract, and you kind of shorten that when you're communicating with people in your office, OT,
initials.
OTP. I normally put K because when you're in law school, K is short for contract. I don't know why it's that way, but anyway, so it is offer to purchase a contract. Mm-hmm. So that's a document that is prepared by the real estate commission. So, you know, realtors dealing with paperwork in preparation of entering a contract for the purchase of property, the realtors are normally very much involved in that at the time that, you know, property is listed, someone's interested in buying it, offer to purchase a contract, gets entered.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the devil's in the details with regard to the offer to purchase a contract. In some of the newer contracts, there are limitations as it relates to the earnest money. So let's say that the buyer put down $2,000 of earnest money, but they fail to close. Then depending on the language in the contract, the seller's remedy is only to be able to keep the earnest money. Okay. And Cecil just mentioned to me this morning a case that's similar to that. I think I haven't looked at the facts on that one yet, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was interesting that when he was mentioning that to me, I responded to him, well, I have a very similar case, you know, as well. And in my particular, and what's going on here is obviously everybody's pushing pause on everything they're doing because
sure,
they don't know what's going on with the economy, their job, da, 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 da.
Yep.
But there's not a provision in these contracts that says if the coronavirus hits, you don't have to close. So then you've got the liability of the party. So in my particular case, we referred to, there isn't a limitation in the particular contract as it relates to earnest money and limiting the damages to the earnest money. So in that particular case, there would be the right of the buyer. Okay. This is a little bit flip flop from what I think Cecil's facts are in the case that he mentioned to me this morning. The buyer is ready, willing, able to buy.
Mm-hmm.
The seller has decided that she does not want to sell. Okay, so what do we do? Well, first of all, we make a demand, you know, we're ready, willing, and able, we're at the closing table, are you going to close? You're not going to close. And the response of the seller is, no, I'm not going to close, not going to close. So then that takes us to the contract.
Mm-hmm.
The contract, offer to purchase and contract, has the language in it as it relates to what the limitations are. In this one, there's not a limitation of damages, so the remedy would be specific performance. And what that is basically you have to file the lawsuit, go to court. Court considers the contract, makes a determination as to whether all of the conditions have been met, so on and so forth, whether there's a defense that the seller can raise as to why the seller does not have to perform. And then in the event that the court finds there aren't any defenses, then the court would enter an order requiring that seller to sell the property to the buyer based on the terms of that contract. And in the, so then what happens, Wes, in the event that the person doesn't do that? Well, then you go back to court. The next time you go back to court is for contempt. And then the court would then enter an order of contempt. And then the sheriff executes on that. Mm-hmm. And then we pick up Mr. Seller there and take him to jail until they decide they're going to do what the judge tells them to do.
So it's
an equitable remedy.
Yeah. So as you say, it's an equitable remedy. So as you see, Mike, remedy of specific performance. I mean, you know, this isn't just, you know, buyer having to write a check. Or seller saying, I'll give you a different piece of property, or I'll pay you this or pay you that. Because, you know, the idea here, just to get to the real bottom line, is that the history is that land, Mike, is unique. There is only one lot and one block and one piece of land, and it is unique. And therefore, that particular lot, that particular block, that particular parcel cannot be replaced by money damages. Now, this is the history behind the philosophy of law that is behind the law, the statute, the case law that says that a buyer or seller in breach of a contract for land can reach the remedy of specific performance. You know, usually when you breach a contract, it's about money damages. It's about how much money have I lost. but not with regard to real estate. With real estate, the judge can enter an order that demands that the seller sell that particular property or that the buyer buy that particular property because of the nature of real estate in North Carolina being deemed to be unique.
The contract element of this is very important too. And you know, people say contract, you know, what's the contract? Doesn't have to always be in writing. Okay. Mm-hmm. You can have a handshake contract with someone in particular situations, unless it falls under what's called the statute of frauds. Statute of frauds is a, say a list of 7 or 8 items basically under our statutes in North Carolina law that if you're going to have a contract on statute on these particular issues, you have to have it in writing. I think most people know that one of those items and kind of number one on the list is the sale of property. Sale of real estate. Mm-hmm. So attorneys, realtors, professionals dealing with closings on real property, they don't do anything moving toward a closing until you have it signed, sealed, and delivered on a contract. Because why is that? And why don't you just go to the lawyer's office and don't use the realtor and just go close on a handshake? Well, because Mr. Attorney doesn't want to work the case up, doesn't want to work the closing up. And then you get to the closing table and the Mr. Attorney and other parties, so on and so forth, title search has been done. You know, we've got all the documents, which there's a lot of documents involved in the closing.
Oh, sure.
Settlement statement, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, day before the closing, one of the parties decide, well, I'm not going to close. Well, if you don't have a written contract, you can't make them do anything.
Yeah.
Okay. So the written contract is step number one toward getting to the closing. And then when you have that written contract, then if a party breaches, if a party doesn't perform, whether it be the seller or the buyer, you always go to the contract itself to determine what the rights are. Now, another element of this is almost all contracts, when we're talking about the offer to purchase and contract for real estate, have a due diligence period in them. That basically allows the buyer to kick the tires, mm-hmm. to do what they want to do, and then get out at any point in time and get their earnest money back as long as they're within that due diligence period. Okay. And that's an important thing to take into consideration when you're entering the contract. Give yourself enough time.
Yep. Let's take a short break here, gentlemen. You can join the conversation by calling us now for free legal advice, 252-247-7282. Or after the show, if you want to call Harvell and Collins, they're open, 252-726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. We're talking about entering contracts and buying property.
Go ahead.
I was going to talk about earnest money. You talk about that term to the layman. What is that? And what are the ramifications with earnest money?
Yeah, well, it's your good faith money you're going to put down. Here's $1,000. Here's $5,000. Here's $2,000. Whatever it may be, and whoever, the buyer is the one who is making that offer.
Right.
My offer is I'm going to buy the property for $300,000 and put down $1,000 earnest money. Okay. Well, the response, the counter by the seller could be, I'm okay with the $300.
It's a little light
but
on the
I
earnest.
Need $5,000 on the earnest money. That's good faith money to show, I'm serious.
Yeah.
I'm going forward because once you lock that property down with offer to purchase and contract, well, it's under contract. So the seller can't go sell it to someone else. We're not in that kind of, in that kind of position anymore. So there's got to be some good faith money there put on the table to show that, I am in fact going to go forward with that. So, and in the event that the buyer, breaches, then obviously the seller is able to, at a minimum, keep that earnest money deposit.
So the buyer could forfeit that money. the earnest money. The buyer could forfeit that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, mm-hmm. depending on what they do. And then that takes us back to the due diligence period. Well, if we find out on our home inspection we've got rot throughout the house or termites or whatever, and we're within that period of time, and we say, oh, we're pulling the plug on this, then you get your $5,000 earnest money back or whatever it may be.
Right.
Contract's over, we move on. Okay. You know, a couple other things with regard to the due diligence period is that, you know, that's a hard date. You know, if that date's coming up and your home inspection isn't done, for example, or your whatever due diligence you feel like you need to do, environmental inspection, if you're talking about a commercial property, whatever it may be, is not completed, don't wait. Get it extended.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very simple document. I need 30 more days. Let's get an extension of 30 more days. Now, you may be in a situation where the seller may want some more earnest money put down if you're asking for more time, but that's fine. That's negotiable. If you have more time and within that 30 days you find out there's a problem, well, you'll get all earnest money back, you know, if you decide to pull the plug on the contract.
Interesting.
The earnest money, though, let's make it clear, though, if there is a breach, the earnest money is not the exclusive remedy for the seller. To just claim the $5,000 earnest money and call it a day. Yes, always depending on the language of the contract. After the due diligence period, though, has expired, North Carolina law or the Real Estate Commission, they really changed the contracts very significantly a few years ago. And this due diligence period, you know, really is a period almost that the buyer just has unlimited discretion in deciding do they want to proceed. Right. They have every opportunity to get what we kind of call buyer's remorse, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. And they can get out of the contract, get their earnest money back, no problem. This is what Wes is speaking of by if you see that if you're a buyer and you see that your due diligence period is about to expire, you better do something about it. Because once it expires, your due diligence period, now you're under contract to buy the property. You don't have the right to rescind or to just say, I don't want to close. Now, there are other provisions in the contract, like having a good title, mm-hmm. the seller being able to provide good title, any other kinds of, if there were a fire or hazard or hurricane, you know, all of those kinds of things are out there lurking until we get to the closing table, but not just the due diligence issues. Those have now expired. So to bring this to some semblance of conclusion, and then we'll keep talking about other real estate kind of issues we're seeing as a result of the coronavirus. You know, Mike, this is one of them. I mean, buyers maybe aren't quite as excited about buying that speculative property, buying into, you know, a commercial real estate transaction, buying into a particular development because of the results of the unknown.
Yeah,
on the other hand, today we have a contract that we're going to put together that's kind of the opposite of that. Let's talk about that a minute, where the seller's very, very excited about buying a piece of property because the price is right now. The buyer's ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's some of that. There's the flip side out there a bit. Now could potentially be, I don't know, I'm not a realtor, but now could potentially be a real good time to buy a piece of property. Some folks have said, have they not, Mike, you're here every day, that it was a good time to invest in the stock market because it was at a low, you know. Yep. Same with real estate. Maybe it's a good time to buy a piece of real estate because the seller is anxious about being able to find a buyer and might let it go for a little less of a price because of, again, this unknown of this virus time that we're living in.
Sure.
So it's probably working both ways.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's a challenging time, mm-hmm. and like you said, you buy low, sell high. So this might be an opportunity if the dirt's right. You know, if it's all properties unique, mm-hmm. this might be that one chance to find that unique property at your price.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, we want to get back to a normal type situation, but you know, we hear about, you know, the businesses that aren't able to go forward. I mean, you know, like we heard about the Lennox plant in Kinston, you know, listening to someone talk about that, you know, yesterday and I think on the radio and this morning actually. And, you know, businesses that may own real property and are kind of in a pinch and maybe they're doing some consolidation. Maybe they were going to try to keep moving, but not keep the real property. So they probably are, you know, opportunities out there, but I'm like Cecil, I don't know about that. I'm not a realtor.
That's a real estate agent's job.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right.
What we see, you know, as a lawyer, we always see, you know, the problems. And so the fact that the real estate market might be kind of active as a result of people trying to pick up a good deal, we wouldn't see that quite yet. Yeah, what we're seeing, of course, is the buyer wanting to get out of the contract because the buyer is concerned about the economy and the current circumstances that we all are confronting. But Mike, we've just got a few minutes here. We are, as I say at the beginning of the program, we are plenty busy. There's a lot going on. The nature of the practice right now, the issues that are coming in through the telephone are a little bit different. Just to reiterate, because I do think it's so important that we repeat things mm-hmm. week to week. You know, we are open, and I think all law firms are open. We were considered to be an essential business. Most law firms are doing most of their business over the telephone. So are we. We certainly have digital capabilities to be able to do net meetings and Skype meetings and things of that nature, Zoom meetings, if we need to. Wes has been very involved in doing those kinds of meetings through depositions and things of that nature. But we are open. We are distancing ourselves greatly when we have signings to do. The clients usually will come in and sit at one end of the table, and I'll wait until they're kind of in place, and I'll come in and sit at the other end of the table.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite as up close and personal as it used to be, shaking hands. And it's different.
Yeah.
It's different.
I had a wonderful
woman in yesterday who lost her husband, been married over 50 years. And the children were there as well. Sad situation. Unexpected death of her husband. He was, you know, in his 70s, but the bottom line is he's no longer with us. And of course, it's hard not to, you know, shake a lady's hand like that, give her a little gentle hug, yeah. That kind of thing. That was the way we used to do, you know, extend your sympathy. But we're unable to do that right now, but the bottom line is that we are open. And the courthouses, are open relative to estates. And register of deeds mm-hmm. and other kinds of essential matters. Now, Wes, and I'll let him speak for himself. He, of course, his files are delayed.
Okay.
The litigation courts.
We'll have time to get at your point, Wes. We'll take this quick break.
And okay.
As Cecil said, Harvell and Collins is open. Mm-hmm. Call them at 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. 252-726-9050. We'll be right back with our final segment of Let's Talk Legal after this brief message. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And Wes, you're going to close it out today for us.
Yeah, Cecil was just mentioning how things at the law firm are a little bit different, obviously, as you would expect. You know, for me, you know, I'm the guy who does litigation. At any point in time, I've got a bunch of cases moving through the courts. They're at different stages. But, you know, the courts are kind of closed for litigation purposes.
Mm-hmm.
I did have an emergency hearing last week, you know, in a clerk-related matter on a guardianship. So, when you really need to get before a judge or a clerk or whatever, you can do that. But you know, for me, my cases are absolutely moving forward, and this is a great catch up time, to be honest with you, because I don't have the deadlines hanging over my head.
Just keep it moving.
You know, and I've talked to a lot of litigators about that. And I think I'm down to like 5 seconds now because I'm getting a hand signal from our guy back there. But we'll talk next week about
Harvell and Collins.com.